You know how much I love my pillow, how much it's changed my life for the better. Well, I figured it was about time that I let you know about my pillow sheets. Now, Mike Lindell has a passion to help you get the best sleep of your life. That's why he has created the new Giza Dream Bed Sheets. Now, these sheets are made from the world's best cotton, Giza, that's only grown in a very small region where the Sahara Desert, Mediterranean Sea, and the Nile River all meet to create the ideal weather conditions for growing cotton. These Giza sheets are available in a variety of colors. They come with Mike's 10-year warranty, 60-day money-back guarantee. The first night you sleep on these sheets, it's heaven. You'll never want to sleep on anything else. Now, right now, you, my listeners, you're going to save 30% and get free shipping when you use the promo code Sean7, S-E-A-N 7, when you go to MyPillow.com. Again, that's promo code Sean7, S-E-A-N 7, at MyPillow.com. All right, glad you're with us. Write down our toll-free telephone number. It's 800-941-SEAN. If you want to be a part of the program, we're back to big issues with the border. We'll hit it at the top of the next hour. Is what, 31,000 illegal immigrants now in Yuma, Arizona, and another migrant caravan is on its way. But don't worry, there's not a crisis at our southern border at all. What do they say? What's the word? We keep having the same word being used by Democrats and the media. It's a manufactured crisis. That's what it is. You know why? Because they can't even think of their own talking points. So rather than, you know, come up with the media, you know, some bifurcation of some kind, you know, some separation. No, it is an unbroken chain between the alliance between the corrupt media mob and, of course, the Democratic Party and their radical leftist socialist Green New Deal agenda. You know, oh, we've got the tape to prove it. Listen.
President Trump must stop holding the American people hostage, must stop manufacturing a crisis.
This president just used the backdrop of the Oval Office to manufacture crisis.
Folks, the president has manufactured one heck of a political crisis for himself.
Donald Trump is manufacturing a national security crisis.
You will hear them say is that this is a manufactured crisis. It's not a national security crisis.
The big scam of the whole address was that there's a crisis. There's not a crisis.
The notion that we have a crisis there, a security crisis, is absolute nonsense.
It remains a Seinfeld shutdown. All about nothing.
What happens when there is a real crisis, when there is a real emergency? Does he take to the airwaves? Do we give him the airwaves? Do we believe him?
There is not a crisis at the border. It's a manufactured crisis for the president to get a political win.
He's determined to convince you there is a crisis at the border, even though an intelligence official tells CNN, quote, no one is saying this is a crisis except them.
Except them. You know what they don't do? When are they ever going to take the time and meet angel moms, dads, or talk to the families of, well, in that two-year period? Let's just look at that two-year period. We often tell you about 4,000-plus homicides, 30,000-plus sexual assaults by illegal immigrant aliens. And let's talk about the 100,000 assault victims, violent assault victims by illegal immigrant families. It's just nauseating. But now even they've pulled back on the manufactured crisis line because it's so obvious and true what's happening. We'll get into that. Also, all the comings and goings, all that's happening in Venezuela as they now have, you know, an uprising as it relates to, what many are even calling a coup attempt there as Maduro is gone and Juan Guaido is holding a contingent of heavily armed troops on the streets of Caracas as we speak in a military buildup. We're watching that today. We'll look at the poll numbers today as Biden now, his big numbers have dropped quite significantly. You know, this is not an indicator. And just going to be straight up about it. I actually believe in some ways if this continues, this is going to be a huge indicator. Now, if you go back to 2008 and you see the size of the crowds for Obama and hope and change and yes, we can and Obama, and chanting and all that going on. I mean, there was a movement, a huge movement in the country towards Obama. He read a great teleprompter, you know, seemed personable, and nobody wanted to talk at all or vet his background or his experience because he had none. I mean, his experience was he was indoctrinated, and we did all the vetting from his youth and his time in Hawaii and so on and so forth, and his family. We did the job the media wouldn't do, and what is a community organizer, an Acorn, and Alinsky, and then we went a little bit deeper into the thoughts and what does it mean to be a disciple of Alinsky. And then, of course, in his own book, when he talked about black liberation theology and over a couple of decades in the church of, you know, Pastor G.D. America, Pastor Reverend Wright, then starting his political career in the home of unrepentant terrorists. And we did ask the question, had he ever met Louis Farrakhan, who just happened to be another guy in the neighborhood like Arizin Dorn? And it turned out we were right. We just couldn't get the picture until his 8 years in office were over, as they successfully hid the truth from the American people. And nobody in the media ever took the time to ask him, well, you live in the neighborhood. Do you know Farrakhan? Have you ever met Farrakhan? Have you ever had a picture taken with Farrakhan? Nobody bothered to ask. And the answer was obviously yes. And we now know the truth. But anyway, the turnout, look, sometimes you can draw conclusions from or in terms of enthusiasm, and pollsters do this all the time. They ask about, well, okay, what is the enthusiasm level for a particular candidate? Now, for the entire time Trump has been running, we have seen when he holds a campaign rally the other night in Wisconsin, the crowd is routinely, you know, it fills arenas. I've never seen one with an empty seat that I can think of. And then you have an overflow crowd. They often put TVs up outside. And, you know, in some locations, you've had 10,000 people outside and, you know, 12,000 people inside. And Obama had big crowds. Remember the night that he won the election? Remember that big crowd in Chicago? It was massive. So you would think after all the publicity that Obama's vice president, Joe Biden, that, you know, him announcing, and he was supposed to be the instant front runner, and he became that, but his numbers are dwindling quickly. But his debut appearance on the presidential as a presidential candidate and then goes to his hometown in Pennsylvania, you would think, all right, well, all right, Biden's no Donald Trump. But maybe he got 5,000 or 6,000 or 7,000 people. But, you know, the guy just entered the race, the undisputed Democratic presidential front runner. We know that because the media tells us that. And I actually had to really do a search. It was not easy to find this morning when I got up. It just came in my head. Well, how many people showed up for that speech yesterday of Biden? And it made me suspicious because if Biden had drawn a big crowd, I'm assuming the media would have printed that. And if it wasn't a big crowd, well, then they probably avoided it. When the longer that I had to do my search to find something that would corroborate what the crowd size was, I began to pretty much know that I was likely right. And then I found in the L.A. Times, the only place that I can find the information, you know, this huge mega media event on every cable network hailing the arrival of the Democratic Party's new messiah. Well, it only drew a pathetic 600 people. And that's in Pennsylvania. You know, jumping into the presidential race for 2020, the apparent frontrunner, Biden, this is from the L.A. Times, flashed his political calling card Monday with a kickoff rally at a Pennsylvania Union Hall that underscored his claim to be the candidate best equipped to win over blue-collar workers in crucial states that gave Donald Trump his victory in 2016. And he even said in the speech, if I'm going to beat Donald Trump in 2020, it's going to happen here. He told the crowd of 6,000. They were packed at a Teamsters Hall. Okay, what does that mean? Well, that means they're all Teamsters. That means when the Teamsters say to their leadership, show up, you pretty much show up. That's kind of the way unions work. And I know we got the coveted firefighters union endorsement. I don't think he has rank and file endorsement at all. I'd venture, because so often, you know, these unions think they speak for rank and file, and they do not. Or steel workers. Remember I told you about, you know, the steel industry and their booming comeback in America thanks to Donald Trump's policies. and how they actually had mothballed a steel manufacturing center in Alabama. And since Trump's been president and he's insisting on using U.S. steel, unlike Comrade de Blasio that wants to eliminate all skyscrapers that use steel and windows, I don't know what you're going to build them with. But anyway, so you had 600 people, according to a Biden aide citing a fire department estimate. All right, if it's a Biden aide giving the L.A. Times the estimate, you got to knock a couple of hundred off. So it's probably 300 or 400. And you can bet the Teamsters guys probably was sent there by union bosses. And I'm not sure the rank and file are going to be. All right, what does that mean? All right, let's see what happens as Biden now hits the campaign trail. Let's see what ratings are like when he shows up on, you know, these liberal news channels and tries to defend the horrific record that he's going to have to defend. You want to run through the short list of things when all is said and done on the issue of Russia and election interference? Even Rod Rosenstein in a speech last week excoriated the Obama administration for doing nothing to inform anybody about the potential of Russian interference. The only one that was saying, hey, these guys want to hack us. They've done it before. They hack all of our allies. And the way what they like to do is create election chaos, and they're good at it. Well, that was Devin Nunes, the head of the House Intel Committee. And I've shown you that article and read it from 2014. And if we don't ever get a hold of, you know, what's happening and the vulnerability in terms of cybersecurity for the secrets of our state and our country, you know, we have big problems. We supposedly have 250,000 IT workers that now work for the federal government. How we cannot stop this is unbelievable to me. It's unacceptable to me. You can't allow these countries to do that. I know maybe it goes over people's heads, but Newt Gingrich is talking about China's advancement with 5G and, you know, how this is the first battle of the cyber wars for the, you know, next 100 years, and that we better get involved and we better catch up as quickly as we can. Now, there was a fake news CNN poll, and it turned out that 2/3 of Biden supporters say that their decision about Biden is not final and that they could change their minds and vote for somebody else. I was surprised that Newt yesterday thought it was Buttigieg that could end up winning this thing. I hadn't even really thought about Mayor Pete. You know, I know Biden has his liberal friends in the media like Mika that dismissed the allegations of being creepy. You know, the nose rubbing and the hair fondling and the massaging of the back and shoulders and the long, awkward kisses on the lips and everything else this guy does. I'll let other people decide, but it's creepy to me.
Crazy, creepy Uncle Joe.
We know that Real Clear Politics had 27% of Democrats in his corner, taken 2 days before his announcement. And he had other ones showing it as high, but anyway, CNN says that Biden led the pack at 13%. All right, that was a quick decline. And I don't see Kamala Harris anywhere. I mean, some people thought she was going to be the front runner, and she seems to have zero enthusiasm or support for her candidacy. Then you got Beto, Robert Francis, Bozo. We only have 10 years left to address climate change, he said. All right, here we go. He's going full Ocasio-Cortez on this. One of the jokes is that Biden says the Obama administration was not corrupt in any way. Okay, not one single whisper of scandal. Well, I've got a list of 70 that I can give you if you really want them. Oh, poor Robert Francis only had a couple of dozen people show up, 35 people in total to see him at UNLV. That's not a good turnout. I can get 35 people at UNLV. And the Democratic race shows it's going to get nasty. And I don't know, it's interesting. And then everybody's kissing Al Sharpton's ring. I mean, you had Mayor Pete Buttigieg meeting Al Sharpton at Sylvia's restaurant in Harlem, New York, and, you know, apparently to confront him on homophobia, but clearly wanting his endorsement. How did he become the kingmaker in all this? All right, we got a lot to get to today. Other news we're going to get to, the socialist agenda, and how more extreme it gets by the day. All right, as we roll along, 800-941-SEAN, you want to be a part of the program. Well, we have an update a little bit here as it relates to where the testimony involving the Attorney General Barr may end up in all of this, because obviously You know, the threat, I mean, Barr is saying that congressional oversight ought to be done by the people elected. It ought not be done by the attorneys because they're so incapable of doing their job. And I think what's interesting here, you know, Senate Dems to grill Barr in a preview of the House hearings. Well, that's all fine. That's going to happen. But I mean, if the oversight or the checks and balances or, you know, which, by the way, is the role of Congress. Nobody's denying the constitutionality of all of that. But anyway, Barr will testify, I believe, tomorrow before the Senate Judiciary Committee. It's all but guaranteed he'll face hostility from the Democrats on that committee. And but, you know, you got to remember that there's going to be overreach here. And I think one of the things that Nadler and the people in the House are afraid of is that Barr is extraordinarily smart, understands the law. And when he testifies, he probably knows a lot more about law than the lawmakers. He is, you know, this is not his first rodeo, as he's now back in this position for the second time in his life. And I think Senate Republicans on the committee will provide a blueprint for the follow-up questions from Democrats and Republicans alike. And whatever they're going to ask in the Senate probably is going to be, you know, something they dig back into in the House. But think about this. All they want is to reopen an investigation that now has been basically investigated four separate times. And this big, epic Mueller prediction and fail and letdown, you know, it's sort of like what Bill Maher said. You know, people like the cowardly Schiff are stalking now President Trump. You know, I remember smoking was socially acceptable. Everybody pretty much was doing it. People smoked in malls and restaurants, even on airplanes. Now you get a lot of disapproving looks, especially from loved ones. So after many years of me smoking, I finally made the switch to Juul. Now there's no more worrying about the way my clothes smell or worrying about what people are going to say, because with Juul, everything is so much easier. Juul is a vaporizer that contains nicotine for a satisfying transition. Now, Juul was designed by smokers for smokers to be an alternative to cigarettes. Juul has no cigarette ash, zero odor, no mess. So if you're one of the 34 million adults in America that smoke, well, know that there is an alternative to cigarettes. Just go to Juul.com/switchamerica. That's JUUL.com/switchamerica. And warning, this product does contain nicotine, and nicotine is an addictive chemical. All right, as we roll along, 25 now till the top of the hour, 800-941-SEAN. You know, it's just funny that the witch hunt is never going to end. It really is. I mean, you look at these, it's like the media is now recovering from the shock and awe of being so wrong and having lied and having, you know, spun so many conspiracy theories for 2+ years that, you know, I predicted what is so painfully obvious. Now, they're never going to admit that they're wrong. They're not going to say that they lied. They're not going to say that their coverage was abusively biased and prejudiced. They're not going to say that they were caught up in an agenda, which they are and continue to be, that they would just, you know, kind of absorb the blow and then move on to the next group of lies, the next conspiracy theories, which is what they're doing now. And part of that includes that, okay, well, now we're going to have hearings. Now we're going to go after the attorney general. Now we're going to go after Rod Rosenstein. Now we're going to go after, I guess, the Office of Legal Counsel that all made the quick determination as handed off to them by Barr that without any consideration of the constitutional or Department of Justice policy that might or might not allow the indictment of a sitting president. And they said, no, the evidence doesn't rise to the account. And then when you actually look at the report, you know, when, the, you know, it was would have been easy for any prosecutor to determine exactly what the attorney general, deputy attorney general Rosenstein and Office of Legal Counsel determined, which was, OK, yeah, if the president said that he wanted to fire Mueller, well, he was saying it all publicly. Maybe I should. And he was venting because he knew that there was no underlying crime, which is now corroborated four separate times. Lastly, by the Mueller report itself, in clear, unambiguous language, no collusion with Russia in the campaign or the Trump campaign. No collusion whatsoever. Now, this is now the fourth time we've determined this. But again, you know, it was funny because I saw something on Mediaite, Lawrence O'Donnell and Rachel Maddow talking about, well, why does Fox talk about Hillary? Well, Hillary was in the news last night because she was selectively on some show reading aspects of the Mueller report, including Trump's reaction when he found out that a special counsel had been appointed. And he just said, oh, bleep, because I've been told when that happens that all progress in an administration stops, because instinctively he knew that this was going to now consume massive portions of his time, as it did, which he should have felt. Now, they didn't do the reading of when it said no collusion. I didn't see Hillary read that part, or the part of the Mueller report that destroys any of the credibility of the Clinton dossier. I got to imagine when Hillary heard that Comey was reopening the investigation into her server that in October of 2016, because of the Anthony Weiner laptop, they were trying to hide it. They had had it for weeks and weeks, but apparently somebody within New York law enforcement was willing to be a whistleblower and come out with it. So Comey had to come out with it, so I hear. Anyway, when that was announced, what did Hillary say? Oh, this is great news, and Hillary doesn't curse, and she's the perfect person. I doubt it, because based on other reports, and even people that were members of the Secret Service detail of the Clinton, they have a very different picture that they paint of her and her infamous temper. Or I could only imagine what she thought of, you know, first of all, the investigation into her illegal server in this mom and pop bathroom closet. I know she's happy that, well, it looks like the meeting on the tarmac with Bill and Loretta Lynch worked, because that's what Strzok and Page said behind closed doors and closed door testimony. Both of them saying that, yeah, well, Loretta Lynch, the Department of Justice, they're all full of Democrats, and this is not an investigation. This whole thing is done. It's complete. And then, of course, Strzok did his part when he interviewed Hillary. Of course, he didn't interview her till 3 days before her exoneration, but they were writing the exoneration in May. I mean, nobody else would have gotten away with that. So what are we talking about? Well, for all these people that are so seemingly obsessed with Russia collusion and obstruction, you know, what they don't seem to want to ever deal with is the fact that they rigged her investigation. They only want to talk about Trump 2016. They only want to talk about Trump and Russia. Well, Melania, the spouse of the president, didn't go over to Russia, get twice her normal speaking fee, and meet with Vladimir Putin, especially at an important time when he first wanted to meet with nuclear regulators in Russia because of the Uranium One deal that we now know in retrospect Hillary would sign off on, but would allow Putin's thugs in America to get a foothold to 20% of America's uranium, which is the foundational material for nuclear weapons, and that we even had a spy within Putin's network in America, and that spy, William Campbell, reported back while he was watching Putin's thugs involved in blackmail and extortion and money laundering and kickbacks. How they ever allowed that deal to go through when we had all that information is one to ponder for the ages. Or maybe something that we better get a hold of, especially if we view Vladimir Putin as the hostile actor he is and Russia as the hostile regime that it is. You know, that makes no sense, especially when you know that uranium is a rare mineral and it's needed, the foundational material for those are nuclear weapons, and we don't have enough of it to the point we have to import uranium. Well, why would we allow any outside entity, country, or group of people to have any access to that limited resource that we have, especially if it's Putin connected? And we can add, of course, if you want to talk about Russian interference, I know it's taken the New York Times and people like Bob Woodward a long time to get on board, but, you know, the idea that they have finally caught up with us on the issue, which I think is important, the dirty dossier. Bob Woodward, you know, this is really important. I think we really got to dig deep into this. And the New York Times saying, well, this dossier seems like Russian disinformation. Hold on a second. You mean the Clinton bought and paid for Russian dossier? Remember how she got it. Now, if it was Trump that funneled, then the Trump campaign that funneled money to a law firm. Okay, that's supposed to be written down campaign finance-wise. Isn't Michael Cohen in trouble for a campaign finance violation? It's supposed to, that's a campaign finance issue. So you give it to a law firm, that should be a law expense. But then if they funnel the money to an op research firm and then funnels money to a foreign entity agent, MI6 Christopher Steele, and Christopher Steele puts together, you know, a group of documents that later become known as the dossier, and then you get a place like BuzzFeed that in January of 2017, just before Trump becomes, the inauguration happens, you know, but before that, remember, it was leaked before the election. David Korn, Michael Lizakoff, Washington Post, we were hearing all about the hookers urinating on the bed story. Now, Matt, just put Donald Trump's name in here, and you would have a real Russia problem. So why? Because when you go back to Hillary, you actually have a real underlying crime with the illegal server that we've confirmed, and even Comey confirmed, had top secret classified information on this hard drive in this mom and pop shop operation, Platts River Network, in a closet. And remember, the original writing or of the exoneration, a draft of the exoneration, had the gross negligence phrase in it, which was then taken out and they put in its place extreme carelessness, because gross negligence is the legal standard. Well, I think it's grossly negligent if you have top secret classified information on an unsecure server, which we were told six foreign agents or countries had hacked into. Probably Russia, probably China, probably Iran, probably North Korea. And you can pick the rest. It could have been anybody there in between. You know, when Trump said, well, I hope that, you know, Russia, if they're listening, maybe they want to give us the 33,000 deleted emails. Oh, he was asking Russia to interfere. Well, no, he's probably assuming what most intelligence people knew. And we now know from the Freedom of Information Act with Tom Fitton's Judicial Watch that when they tested 40 of those emails and four of them had top secret classified information on it, they freaked out at the FBI. They could not believe that it had happened. And the danger that it might have posed to sources and methods and brave Americans and even our intel people or people on the ground if their names are mentioned. And if this is only 40, and in the beginning we had 60,000 emails, she turned over 63,000, she turned over 60, got rid of 33,000. Who knows what was in those emails? That's why it mattered. And then you have a crime. It's called the Espionage Act, 18 U.S.C. 793. So that's the crime, the underlying intent behind that. Well, why do we delete the emails and bleach bid and use hammers and remove SIM cards? Was to cover up, to destroy the evidence of that crime, which is so obvious. So the answer to fake news, conspiracy TV, MSNBC is you're a bunch of hypocrites. And you're a bunch of phonies, and you don't give a rip about the truth, because if you really cared about the hostile regime of Russia, and you really cared about the bad actor Putin, and I believe that's all true, then you would care a lot about what happened here, because our national security was put at risk, and then she destroyed the evidence, but you only seem to care about anything Russia-related if the name Donald Trump's associated with it, and ignore a truth that is now undeniable, overwhelming, and incontrovertible, which is we have four investigations clearing Donald Trump, including the FBI nine-month investigation where Lisa Page, behind closed doors, says, we don't have anything. Before the appointment of Mueller, they were trying to find it. You don't think Mueller was trying his hardest to find this information? They were digging as deep as they possibly could. They wanted it. This team of Trump haters that he put on his team, they wanted it and wanted it badly. Robert Mueller didn't want to write no collusion whatsoever, no evidence of collusion whatsoever. But you have to then ask, this connection with Russia and the Clintons is way too cozy. And now that the New York Times, I guess they've been embarrassed to such a degree, even they have to now look at the dossier. And what is the dossier showing them? The dossier showing them. Oh, man. Wow. Looking at this, and maybe we now see something else here. Oh, my gosh. This might be Russian disinformation. You can't make it up. You couldn't write a novel with this many twists and turns and have everybody get it up so wrong, so often, spin every lie and conspiracy because they all wanted it to happen. The Democrats wanted it. The deep state wanted it. The media wanted it. All these people that didn't want Trump, the people that rigged Hillary's investigation and gave her a get out of jail free card that no one else in America could ever obtain. And then for her then to use her bought and paid for Russian disinformation, potentially, according to the New York Times, to then, let's see, use it in FISA applications. But you don't tell the FISA judges Hillary's the one that paid for this stuff. You don't tell the FISA judges that it's not verified and not corroborated. You don't tell the FISA judges anything that that represents the truth. You put your good faith name and your years as a professional law enforcement person behind your signature to get the FISA application through. As McCabe said, no dossier, no FISA warrant. And you get it before the election, and what you do with it is you get a backdoor through Carter Page right into all things Trump campaign world, and then all Trump world. And you keep in that world and you stay in that world because those warrants went on for an entire year because you had three subsequent renewal applications, all of which the bulk of information presented to the FISA court and the FISA application were Hillary's Russian disinformation dossier that she paid for. You cannot write a novel like this. And all that's happened. And now we see ourselves, and they're not going to stop. Now we're just moving on. Well, if we can't get them here, well, that we'll have never-ending Russia for 4 years, and then we want to empower the IRS, weaponize them now to go after Trump. The intel community has been weaponized to go after Trump and his opponents, and his supporters, rather. Now we'll weaponize the IRS. Now you give us all his tax information because we don't like him. No specific reason, just a fishing expedition. Deutsche Bank, give us all Trump records. Now we'll fish over here. Then we're going to fish in this quarter. Then we'll go over here. And eventually we're hoping we're going to find something that we could use to take this guy down. Because they didn't like the outcome of the election. They had planned every other scenario except Trump winning. They don't like the people's choice.
The river's dry right now, correct. So it's easy to get through.
Correct.
Who is this running right here?
This is a family group that's just crossed.
A family group is just crossing while we're right here, right
yes.
now?
Yes. We have another group that's coming up over here. Basically walk till they find an agent and they turn themselves in.
So they want to see you right now?
Definitely.
They want to get apprehended?
Like I said.
They want to get processed?
They want to get processed, given the papers, then they go north. And they have legal papers to be wherever they're going to be at. They're by themselves.
8 years.
She's 10 years of age, hermanita?
Ocho.
10 years of age and 8.
10 and 8, and you've been traveling alone for how long?
They were traveling. Their mom set them down. She said she was going to go buy something for them to eat and never returned.
Trump is manufacturing a national security crisis.
You will hear them say is that this is a manufactured crisis. It's not a national security crisis.
The big scam of the whole address was that there's a crisis. There's not a crisis.
The notion that we have a crisis there, a security crisis, is absolute nonsense.
It remains a Seinfeld shutdown. All about nothing.
What happens when there is a real crisis, when there is a real emergency? Does he take to the airwaves? Do we give him the airwaves? Do we believe him?
There is not a crisis at the border. It's a manufactured crisis for the president to get a political win.
He's determined to convince you there is a crisis at the border, even though an intelligence official, tells CNN, quote, no one is saying this is a crisis except them.
Oh, manufactured crisis. You look deeper and deeper every day. We had 31,000 people now in just recent weeks ending up in Yuma, Arizona, in Tucson, Arizona, and nobody knows what to do with them. Here's the headline. 31,000 illegal aliens have flooded Yuma, Arizona in the last 6 months. 6 months alone. That imagine that. If every American city had to absorb that many illegal aliens, it increased their total population by a third. So explain to me how the infrastructure works under that scenario. In other words, you pay for the criminal justice system, the educational system, the healthcare system. We're already paying billions of dollars. In other words, American taxpayers. Oh, do we expect that they're going to immediately start paying taxes, get jobs, contribute to society? And of the 31,000, what percentage, let's say it's 1%, happen to have bad intentions or a criminal element that will add to the homicide numbers that we have talked about at length, the sexual assault numbers we've talked about at length, and the violent assaults that we've discussed at length? What about the victims? What about the angel moms and dads, the permanent separation? Anyway, Hour 2, Sean Hannity Show, 800-941-SEAN, if you want to be a part of this extravaganza, here to react to what is now yet another growing crisis at the border. That was Fox News's Maria Bartiromo and conducting a special episode of Sunday Morning Features about the problem that's going on at the border and her talking with Border Patrol officers. Mark Morgan is the former chief of Border Patrol under the Obama administration, retired assistant director of the FBI. Maria Salazar is a Cuban-American journalist, broadcast TV presenter, if you will, or anchor, and has worked for CNN, Univision, Telemundo to discuss the border crisis, the overcrowding at the detention centers. What happens now that when we're so overcrowded that people just get let go? I think a lot of this, Mark Morgan, is rooted in the fact that, you know, a lot of people from these countries in Latin America, Nicaragua, El Salvador, Guatemala, and of course, people in Mexico, they're seeing the wall is being repaired and built, and they probably think that the time is short, that they'll have an opportunity to sneak in across that southern border.
Yeah, Sean, so I think you're absolutely right. There's a couple of things to unpack there. One is absolutely, I think you're correct. They're seeing some stuff done, so there is some element of, hey, we got to get in. But really, the biggest element is our system in the United States. Make no mistake, the American people need to understand the reason why they're coming is because we're telling them to come. Our laws provide an open border for these individuals. They're being educated more and more each and every day. You're seeing more countries now make themselves come towards the Northern Triangle countries to make their way up because everybody knows you come here, you grab a kid, you're in free. The United States, open borders, never to be heard from again. It's not going to stop unless we fix our laws.
You having been down at the border, we know that Mexican authorities, the Ministry of Interior Northeastern Regional Delegate, this guy Enrique Avellano, you know, he's saying straight up that authorities have deported many MS-13 gang members that they detected in the migrant caravans. We have another big one yet coming again. And they have found them. What they do is they mix into these migrant caravans headed towards the U.S., which means that if the caravans get through, that means they get through. Have you seen that a lot?
Sean, absolutely. And I'm so glad that you keep hitting this. This is the one thing that's just so incredulous for me that the American people aren't understanding. Because of our broken laws and system, and we're looking at this year a million. And because 65 to 70% are going to be family units or unaccompanied minors, that means we're going to allow in 650,000 individuals. The borders are wide open to those individuals. You don't think there's a bad element in there? Of course there is. And then, Sean, let's not forget, that's just what we see. Don't forget, there's a couple hundred thousand easily that are illegally entering that we don't catch, that we don't see. And what do you think the makeup of those individuals are? I'll submit to you the majority of those individuals are majority not good people. I don't understand what Americans miss. I don't understand what Congress is missing. This isn't about legal immigration. This is about illegal immigration and protecting the citizens of this country, the angel families, as you mentioned. Sean, how many more angel families have to be created? How many more American citizens?
No, I don't think anybody talks to them but me and maybe a couple of other people on Fox and the president. Because I know Nancy Pelosi, I know the Democrats, you know, they literally scream about, well, child separation, which the person that fixed that is Donald Trump.
Right.
That separation is temporary, and the idea is to get kids that are alone back with their parents. And now, you know, nobody talked about the fact that Obama and the Bush administrations did it. Let me go to Maria Salazar. Maria, you're a Cuban-American, and you're a journalist. And the narrative, if you listen to the media mob in America, is that, well, if Republicans, you know, continue to build border barriers, well, to stop the 90% of heroin, the human trafficking, gangs, cartels, and all the other crime associated with the border, if Americans do that and Republicans push that, that this is going to be really bad for them politically with the Hispanic community. Do you buy that?
I don't buy that one bit, and I thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to say to your audience how embarrassed we are as Hispanic Americans, because what we're seeing is...
Well, let me just stop you right there. You don't need to be embarrassed about anything. You are in this country legally. You are part of our family. I don't care where people come from. Nobody cares about that. We're just asking that we have an opportunity to vet you and make sure that you're capable of taking care of yourself so it's not a burden on the American people. I don't think we're asking too much to obey our laws, respect our sovereignty and our borders.
And that's the way my parents came in and hundreds of other millions of Nicaraguans and Salvadorians. But what I'm saying to you is that since I am Hispanic, I can explain to you, Sean, that millions of Hispanics feel the same way I do. But then the problem with the Democrats is that they're trying to project that the Hispanic Americans are with the Dems, that we are voting with them, and that we agree with sanctuary cities and that we agree with the caravans because we have to protect the Central Americans that want to come in legally. And I want to tell you, that is not true. Because, you know, I live in Miami. I'm surrounded by undocumented, by illegals, people that are mowing the lawn and picking up the tomatoes. And I always stop, and in Spanish, I ask them, I want you to tell me, I'm going to go to Fox News, and I'm going to talk to Sean Hannity and the people at Fox, and I want you to tell me, Mr. Guy mowing the lawn, do you agree with the caravan? And they go, no, we don't. Why? Because they fear the same fear that you're feeling. Their kids could be kidnapped, could be killed by the M13, or they could be angel parents, because the angel parents are not only Americans. You have a lot of Hispanics that have lost their children at the hands of people like the people that killed Kate Steinle. So we don't agree with what's happening, and that is one of my major frustrations, is that Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats are trying to project themselves as the saviors of the Hispanics, and they're not. They have played political football with us, and right now they're playing it again because they are not allowing President Trump and his administration to reach an agreement on immigration.
Maria, do you believe that the Democrats are looking at the long ball game here, and for them they think the majority of people that might be coming to America will be in need of governmental assistance and therefore be more inclined to go with Democrats and their promises that everything's going to be free in America?
Absolutely,
do you think that's what
Sean,
they're thinking?
That's their bet. And that's why I feel so frustrated, because I want my people to understand and to read the game that they are trying to sell to us. Because but at the same time, the Republicans need to understand that they have to smell the votes and they have to approach us in a more friendly manner and saying, you Hispanics in the United States, you belong to the Republican Party because we share the same values that are entrenched in the Republican Party. Self-reliance, paying taxes, God-fearing, law-abiding. Leave me alone. I don't want to have anything to do with the government. I want to raise my family and I want to go to church. Those are the values of those people that are trying to come in. That obviously they cannot come in this way. But for the people that are in here.
Yeah. Mark, having been the former chief of Border Patrol under Obama, Now, when he was president, again, they supported building a wall. They supported funding the wall. They supported DACA. They supported Dreamers, all of which the president offered as part of a deal when the government was shut down. My question to you is, having served in that position under that president, and you're advocating pretty much the same principles that you did then, but from what I understand is you're taking a lot of heat when you talk to people like me, and somehow you're being attacked. Is that true?
Yeah, and so, but that's okay. I mean, when I decided to break my silence, I knew that was going to happen. And first of all, Maria, I just got to say, Sean, you know, Maria, amen to what you just said. We need to hear more of you. We need to hear that perspective. The hypocrisy on the other side is just so overwhelming.
All right, got to take a quick break. We have the issue involving Venezuela, the uprising against Maduro, and we'll tell you all about that on the other side with Maria Salazar, Mark Morgan. Don't forget Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on the Fox News Channel. Also, Congressman Chip Roy will check in with us on our pollsters. All right, now that creepy, crazy Uncle Joe is in, what do the numbers look like? We'll check in with John and Jim McLaughlin. One of them will be late. I won't tell you which one. That's in our news roundup hour as we continue. All right, as we continue, Mark Morgan is the former chief of Border Patrol under the Obama administration. Maria Salazar, you can find information on her at mariasalazar.com. I always talk about the 98-99% of people that, well, they're not respecting our laws, our sovereignty, and our borders. But I do understand when you come from, and I've been down to the border 14 times at this point, and I have met many of the people that are trying to cross in, and what they're seeing, I remember specifically being on the border of San Diego, and, you know, on one side of that border is a what looked like, you know, a garbage dump with wheels and garbage, and all. I'm looking at that side of the border. You could see right through, and you see kids playing, you know, in something we would never want our kids to play in. On the other side of the border, $500,000, $250,000, million-dollar homes. And if I'm on that side in a shack, and that's exactly what most people at that section were living in, and I'm looking over at this section, I'm saying I want to be in that section. I understand the desire to make a better life for themselves and their family, and we don't have a problem with people coming in legally. But if you can't check them out in the day and age of radicalism and these gangs and cartels, we need to be able to vet every person.
Sean, that's it. That's exactly it. So I for the FBI, I lived and worked in El Paso, and every day on 10, I got to see exactly what you described on either side. So there's no issue with understanding somebody wants a better economic life. We get that. We support that. This is about legal versus legal. This is about making sure we're vetting every single person that's coming into this country for the safety and security of our citizens. So what we have now, Sean, that I've been trying to tell people, this is actually the worst crisis along the southwest border we've ever seen. Right now, the borders are completely open. We have kids, we have adults and cartels that are supporting renting of kids so that illegal adults can come into this country. Right now, our system is so overwhelmed. They're coming with fake documents, no documents at all. But because of our laws, we can't vet them. The American people need to understand, you grab the kids, you come here.
All right.
We can't vet you.
We're losing 300 kids a week to heroin. 90% of it crosses that border. Add fentanyl to that, and it's an unmitigated disaster for small towns and big cities in this country. All right, stay right there. Maria Salazar, Mark Morgan with us.
We support the people of Venezuela. We're sad that they have been starved by Maduro. They've been denied food and medicine and basic humanitarian needs having been met. The United States has gotten supplies there to them. Sometimes those have been obstructed or burned. But we stand with the people of Venezuela, and we stand with Juan Guaido. Maduro has to go. We've made that very clear for a number of years. The we is the president, the vice president, the secretary of state, Ambassador Bolton. I think that Secretary of State Pompeo put it best this morning when he said this is Operacion Libertad, and this will finally get the Venezuelan people the freedom that they need. And 3 million Venezuelans have fled to neighboring countries like Colombia and Brazil. So they've told you all you need to know. I'm sure they would prefer to be in their home country, but they simply can't stay there and be expected to survive or thrive. So we are watching it, monitoring. I got a briefing this morning before I came out, and they're monitoring very closely the situation there. We want a peaceful transition. Chavez stuck around for about 20 years. These things don't happen overnight, but in 3 short months, I think the world has seen the horrors of the Maduro regime. The average Venezuelan has lost about 20 pounds and over a year. That's just a tragedy. As the president has said many times, Venezuela was once one of the wealthiest countries in the world. It's now, you've seen what's happened to the people there. So these dictators to cling to power and wealth for their own purposes, they must go, beginning with Maduro.
All right, they must go with Maduro as we now see the uprising in Venezuela. You know, the sad thing about Venezuela, you know, even going back to Hugo Chavez, should be one of the richest countries that is prospering at a level that would be unprecedented. They have more oil reserves for that country. They could be providing the entire world in part with the lifeblood of our economy. Look, the great news is we don't need Venezuela's oil. We don't need anybody's oil or natural gas. We've got enough of our own. And the president, through deregulation now, has opened up two pipelines, Dakota Keystone Pipeline. He's opened up Anwar for drilling, and he has now made America energy independent for the first time in 75 years. Now we are a net exporter of energy, which means, oh, there's going to be hundreds of thousands, if not millions of jobs, high-paying career jobs for Americans. As long as we're not stupid enough to buy into this, we've got to eliminate oil and gas and the combustion engine, and we got to get rid of cows and planes and everything from the moment you're born, daycare, preschool, kindergarten, grammar school, high school, college is going to be paid for by your government. Then followed up by, oh, you get a guaranteed job, guaranteed salary, guaranteed government vacation. I wonder where they're going to send me. And then guaranteed government healthy food. And guaranteed health care, but you can't buy your own health care plan. No more choice. How did keep your doctor plan and save money work out for you? Then it's the other promise when you retire, totally taken care of. By the way, whether you're willing or unwilling to work. Well, that's the promise that was Venezuela and socialism and, of course, power and corruption and greed by those powerful few resulted in mass poverty. Remember, Jorge Ramos went to Venezuela and was, I think he was interviewing Maduro at the time. And what happened? Oh, yeah, they took and confiscated a film because he was asked a few questions he didn't like about people eating out of garbage trucks. It was pretty disgusting. Anyway, so Vice President Pence, the Trump administration, other top-ranking members today of the administration voicing their full support for the opposition leader in Venezuela, who is he's a pretty fascinating figure. And what you have is a contingent of heavily armed troops that are in the streets of Caracas amid the call for the military to rise up and oust Nicolas Maduro. We continue now with Maria Salazar. MariaSalazar.com, Cuban-American journalist, worked for CNN, Univision, Telemundo. Mark Morgan, former chief border patrol under the Obama administration. Now, Maria, I understand you interviewed both Guaido, and you also Maduro, correct?
Yes, correct. And I just created a little contrast between one and the other. And I've been very good friends with Leopoldo Lopez, who I don't know if your audience recognizes that name, but Leopoldo Lopez was the creator of this movement and is the guy who named Juan Guaido to be the interim president. And he was released today by, I'm sure that you have reported this, Sean, by the Guaido forces. That's an extraordinary event happening today, which I think indicates that this is the beginning of the end of the Maduro regime. And Leopoldo Lopez, when I spoke with him via telephone a couple of weeks ago, told me something that is very, very important, which is if it thanks to Donald Trump, and remember, you know, these people are not Americans and they do not know Trump. If it would have not been for the Trump presidency, we would not be liberating Venezuela the way we are right now. Remember that Chavez was in power for 20 years. We had the Bush administration, we had the Clinton, we had the Obama, we had another Bush, and no one really did anything for the Venezuelan freedom except the Trump administration. And I'm not brown nosing, I'm just stating the facts. And if we just heard, I think, Kellyanne Conway, we heard Vice President Pence, we have heard President Trump, who received Leopoldo Lopez's wife at the Oval Office a couple of years ago. If Trump would have not been behind this movement, we would not be having this Operación Libertad, Operation Freedom, happening today. Those are the facts.
And we have to be not only Cuban Americans, but the Venezuelan Americans and the Colombians and the Central Americans and the whole Latin American community that lives in the United States, we have to be very grateful. You know why? Because Venezuela is the first step. After Venezuela comes Cuba. And then the whole hemisphere is free.
Do you think that happens in Cuba? I mean, you know, I met this guy a long time ago, and I'll ask Mark about this too and get his perspective, but when I was in Huntsville, Alabama, I lived in a little town called Athens. It was next to Huntsville, kind of midway between Huntsville and Decatur, Alabama. But there was a guy that was from Cuba. And during the Cuban Revolution, when Castro came to power, he came from a fairly wealthy family and they owned a lot of property. And he told me hours and hours of stories about how he and other families were part of the resistance, and many people were killed and their lands confiscated. I mean, Castro was a murdering thug that stole and confiscated everybody's property. And and how he barely escaped with his life. I mean, you know, life is pretty miserable when people will insert themselves in, you know, rickety, broken down, dilapidated boats and shark infested waters, or throw themselves on an inner tube in the hope that they can make it to the United States and get one foot on dry land so that they can be in safety and security. That's all reality. You've got to be pretty desperate to take that perilous journey. And Mark, they do it all the time because of the you know, to them it's worth the risk, because living there is just a living hell, and the poverty and the lack of bare necessities,
right,
frankly, forces them to take an extreme measure.
That's absolutely right, and you can't blame them. And, you know, as I was listening to Maria, you know, I wish you could see my face, because, you know, she's doing something that, you know, mainstream media doesn't do at all, and that's talk about the facts. Right. Just look at the facts that she just laid out with respect to this issue, what the current administration is doing. And it's absolutely right. But what do we do? There's that old saying, right? I'm sure we've all heard, don't let, you know, facts get in the way of a good emotional argument. And as you guys described it, that's exactly what's going on. We need to stand behind this administration on this.
Yeah. Well, I think. All right. So where is this headed, Maria? You've been down there, and we're going to move on after this. But I mean, it's what I think is important here is that people understand that how this ends up is going to be important. Why do you think Guaido is a better candidate, as a better person to lead? We already know about Maduro. Why is he better?
Well, he is better because he represents freedom. He has announced and he has said that he will hold elections as soon as all the political parties can regroup, and he can call for fair and transparent and elections that will be observed by international observers. Not only that, is that the United States the Trump administration and I don't work for Trump. I'm just telling you, your guest was saying, I'm stating the facts. Trump was able to create a coalition that, unfortunately, during the Cuban Revolution, was John Kennedy was not able to put together, because we know who the Kennedys are, and we, you know, I'm Cuban American, so I know the story that you were just saying very vividly, because that's the story of my family, of my mom, my dad, and my grandparents. We lost everything, and thank God that I was able to be born in this country, so I'm first generation. So I know what the Cubans went through. And the Venezuelans were able to escape that because of the Trump administration. Why? Because when the Europeans, the Italians, the French, the Germans, the Canadians, the Mexicans and the Brazilians and the Colombians saw that Trump was really serious to get Maduro out of power, they joined the bandwagon. It was Trump, the one who led the way to say to the rest of the hemisphere, this is my plan. I want to liberate Venezuela, then Cuba, then Nicaragua, because those are the three communist spots in this hemisphere. But if it would have not been for Trump, it would not be happening today, because the Colombians and the Brazilians would have been scared to go against Maduro. And then the Canadians would have continued doing business. And the Europeans, even more. So that's why Guaido is going to win, because he has the United States. Secretary Mnuchin just said a couple of days ago that there is $10 billion behind this plan to revive the Venezuelan economy. So that's the reason why he's going to win, because we're behind him.
All right. Thank you both. Maria, congratulations to you and all your success. And the fact that you have that kind of access is pretty amazing. Also, Mark Morgan, thank you for your outspoken voice. We really appreciate it. 800-941-SEAN, toll-free telephone number if you want to be a part of the program. We'll have more on all of this happening tonight on Hannity on the Fox News Channel. All right, as we continue, we check in with Chip Roy, congressman in Texas's 21st District, member of the House Budget Committee, Oversight and Reform Committee. And anyway, there's been a lot of attacks against the president and his family. And Congressman, welcome to the program. Glad you're with us.
Sean, how are you doing? I hope you had a blessed Easter.
I did.
Great being back in Texas during the work period and great being with family to get a perspective that's different than what you just rattled off, what the American people actually care about versus what Democrats want to force the country to go down and waste time doing. So I appreciate all you do in highlighting that.
Let's talk first about one thing that is flagrantly missing in all of this is I don't see any Democratic agenda. What are the Democrats for? What are they going to do to make our lives better? Because we went from the horrible Obama economy to record low unemployment and job growth and economic growth. We haven't seen this in well over a decade.
Everything you just said, Sean, is what I heard from the people of Texas and Central Texas that I'm proud to represent when we talked about what matters to them, that they're proud that the president is doing what he said he would do. And that's what they were saying about me. They were saying, I'm glad we worked hard to get you elected, and you're going up there and you're fighting against this ridiculous Democrat stonewalling fishing expedition, and whatever agenda they do have is contrary to the values of Texas, the Green New Deal that would crush jobs, be crippling to our economy, all tilting at windmills that won't actually do anything to clean the environment when we've got good, clean, burning natural gas that's helping the world as we speak. Talking about Medicare for all and $32 trillion or $40 trillion to cripple our healthcare system. They're talking about what the president is doing. You rattled off the list. Trying to work to secure our border, even though Democrats won't work with him. Getting rid of this stupid clean power plan and this so-called Paris Agreement that would have crippled our economy. Getting good judges. Making sure that we've got a Supreme Court that's closer to the rule of law. All of those things are the things that people care about. They don't want to see Congress wasting time going down the road that Nadler wants to go down, where he's trying to witch hunt the president and now the attorney general, who's been on the job for a few months and is really doing a great job getting this all wrapped up, working with Mueller to get the report out. And now they're going to say, well, you got to come before and have subpoenas with staff attorneys. The Judiciary Committee in the House is filled with lawyers. The Article I Congress can sit down with the Article II Attorney General and have a conversation and interview the Attorney General, which he's willing to do. They don't want to do that because they want to show, they want to witch hunt. They don't care about the American people. They don't care about 3,000, 4,000 people coming across our border every day. They don't care about the fact health care costs are doubling and tripling because they want control. They want command and control from Washington, D.C., and we're standing in the way of it, and it's making them mad. And the president is standing in the way of it, and it's making them mad, and that's what I hear when I go back to Texas.
All right, Congressman Chip Roy, thank you for being with us. We appreciate your time and wish you the best.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it very much.
All right, sir. Thank you. Hope to see you again. 800-941-SEAN is our toll-free telephone number. You want to be a part of the program. All right, with Biden in, what are the polls like? We'll check in with John Jim McLaughlin at the top of the hour. Then we'll get to your calls, 800-941-SEAN. An amazing Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern, with a massive breaking story. Yep, we're on top of it. By John Solomon. We'll tell you more about it later. Listen, want to remind you, all right, you have to mail something private. Something that gives personal information like tax documents that have your Social Security number on it, other financial information.
Coming up next, our final news roundup and information overload hour.
All right, news roundup, information overload hour, Sean Hannity show. You know, I saw this on Drudge and I said to my staff, I was on the air. We were doing the show and Creepy Crazy, Uncle Joe was out there giving his big speech in Pennsylvania. You know, Pennsylvania's economy is so good right now. There was an article yesterday about how employers are going into jails because they need employees so bad that they're looking for people that might soon be getting released and offering them jobs. I mean, that's how good the Pennsylvania economy is under Donald Trump. Anyway, so it was on Drudge. It said that Biden was slurring through his speech a little bit. And then, you know, Biden kind of curses a lot. And we put a little montage of both together to see what you think.
I want to thank
Rich Fitzgerald, the county executive, Allegheny County executive, being here. And all my time in public life, once I've gotten involved, the country wasn't built by Wall Street bankers, CEOs, and hedge fund managers. If the enterprise hits hard times, everybody took a hit. Union workers, the UAW, took incredible cuts in their future and their pensions and the less to get GM working. They also got that last year and try to cut wages or freeze wages for their people. Right today, the same is happening in big hospital systems. I think we have to rethink how we define what constitutes a successful economy. Folks in America don't think their children are going to have the same standard of living they had. How can a person dignity be maintained? Why they do that? It means investing much more in medical research to conquer devastating diseases like cancer and addiction and Alzheimer's. So God bless you all and may God protect our troops. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Watching this campaign, as we all have for so long, it seems like every 10 minutes there's a shift in sort of what the strategy is. Again,
who gives a whether you think or anybody thinks they're going to stick to a message?
This is bull. This is malarkey. This is outrageous. Outrageous for the President of the United States to go to a foreign country, sit in the Knesset, and that's what I'm told.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States of America, Barack Obama.
Crazy, creepy Uncle Joe.
800-941-SEAN. You want to be a part of the program. News Roundup, Information Overload. All right, joining us, John and Jim McLaughlin, both pollsters, founders of McLaughlin & Associates. Remember, John was working on, most recently, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's successful reelection campaign, which was not particularly easy, considering they came out with a recommended indictment 5 weeks before the prime minister's reelection. I think he accepted free cigars. Is that pretty much the essence of his horrible crime that they were accusing him of?
Well, it was a lot of trumped up things, but in the meantime, of phony stuff. But in the meantime, by the way, I have to congratulate you. You were the first one in the American media to call Prime Minister Netanyahu a winner while they were saying over in Israel he might have lost and his opponent was declaring victory.
I have good sources on the ground in Israel, and everybody knew that what they were saying, because the polls came out, and the polls, they don't have a lot of media in Israel. We ought to sort of paint the picture for people. It's all liberal media. The only time they get conservative media is if people have satellite dishes. Right. And they're able to pick up Fox News, or we work on Tel Aviv Radio 102 FM, which we have done a number of shows from there when we're in Israel, or we actually have done shows just for Israel from the United States, which was a lot of fun.
And as the Prime Minister said, it's like left-wing press like you have in America, except no Sean Hannity, no Fox News. You were the first one to call it right and say that Netanyahu would be reelected. So,
all right, let me go to your brother, Jim, who rarely shows up on time. I guess we should reward him for being here on time. And
I'm
sometimes
always
doesn't
on time
even
for you, Sean.
Well, you say that, but, you know, how many times do you forget to call, or you won't pick up the phone, or, you know, your brother has to cover for you because you're out busy, you know, gallivanting, doing whatever it is that you do. But, all right, so Crazy Uncle Joe gets in the race. Conventional wisdom is he's the more moderate candidate. I don't buy that notion at all. I think that, you know, he has to run on the Obama Biden record, the Biden-Obama record. That means all the Russia stuff that's going to be coming out, that was on his watch. That means the horrible economy, 13 million more Americans on food stamps, 8 million more in poverty, more debt than 43 presidents before combined, and the worst recovery since the 40s. I don't think that's a good track record to run on, or the Iranian deal, or any of the other dumb things that they did. And he's not getting those questions yet. Newt Gingrich yesterday surprised me, and he actually thinks that it's actually this guy, Pete Buttigieg, Mayor Pete, yep, he thinks might win this thing.
That is not out of the realm of possibility, because the press seems, you know, they want to
They are so invested in trying to beat Donald Trump right now. They're doing everything in their power to try to elevate Joe Biden. And let me tell you something. What those primary voters, because Joe Biden, in many ways, he's what we call a pseudo-incumbent in this thing. And they're making a big deal like, oh, he's up at 30%. That means over 7 out of 10 of these Democratic primary voters that know who Joe Biden is, they're not voting for him. His numbers are weaker than what Hillary's were last time around. And one of the things I think is really, really interesting, and it goes why he poorly played the race card in his announcement video, was he's actually getting about half of the non-white vote. He's, for all intents and purposes, he's getting most of the African Americans. What's going to happen is, though, as the election goes on in the Democratic primary, they're going to peel away from him, just like they did with Hillary Clinton when she ran in the primary against Barack Obama. So he is really soft, and you laid out the Trump contrast perfectly, because it's literally the Obama-Biden record of failure and corruption versus the Donald Trump record of success.
And to me, that's everything. I mean, look, this is going to be the comparison. This is, I think, John, a classic choice election, because, all right, we have 8 years of Obama. The economic track record was atrocious. And I'll go. I'm not going to start this early, but soon I will go back to what that record was in detail. Then we're going to look at their foreign policy. I don't know many other people that approve the idea of dropping $150 billion in cash and other currency in cargo planes on the mullahs' tarmac, radical mullahs that chant death to Israel, death to America, that are hell-bent on a nuclear holocaust in our time. And I think that, you know, when push comes to shove, I think Americans also are going to ask this question. Are you better off than you were 4 years ago? And I think the answer is, you know, simple. We are way better off. Does America stop that prosperity and turn back? That's the question.
Absolutely not, because the people, 6 out of 10 Americans, the polling we're doing now, they know the economy is better, heading in a better direction. The 6 million new jobs that are created, the growth that's going on, America's stronger, better shape. But on the other point about it is with the president. The president has labeled it as Sleepy Joe, or before that it was Creepy Joe. What he should be calling him is Swampy Joe, because as you've pointed out, Joe Biden has serious problems with the Ukraine, what he did over there, where he forced the prosecutor to end an investigation into his son's corruption, where they had there was a natural gas
in the Ukraine. What you're describing is Hunter Biden. Now, Peter Schweizer has allegations, or, well, not allegations. He put in his book some details about Hunter Biden flying on Air Force Two with Joe Biden to China. And he was doing millions and millions of dollars in deals with Chinese companies on the very same trip in which he was on his father's plane, which would say a conflict of interest. On the Ukraine situation, we had a prosecutor there that was investigating, based on John Solomon's reporting in The Hill, investigating Hunter Biden and some of the activities that he was involved in. And Joe Biden is in Ukraine, and he then leverages U.S. aid money, a lot of it, and says, I'm on the ground 6 hours. And in 6 hours, you get to decide whether you're going to fire this prosecutor or not. And he's talking about it in the past tense. And if you don't fire him, I'm not giving you the money. And if you don't believe me, call Obama. He got them to fire the prosecutor investigating his son. Let's play that tape.
I said, we're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said, I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Oh, son of a got fired.
Son of a gun. He got fired. He didn't mention that he was investigating his son, did he?
No, no. And the other part here is you've got a situation where Joe Biden, his best day is in the polls the first day he announces, because the American media and none of his opponents have touched this yet. But you know it. I know it. He's got major ethical issue problems where he may have been part of his son's lobbying firm, where they were making more money than they've ever made before. And it goes back to Ukraine and it goes back to China. And these are big business deals where you're not talking about millions here or there. You're talking about billions. And there's no way he's going through a Democrat primary where they're not going to touch him on this.
Yeah, what do you think, Jim?
And John's exactly right. That's going to be his biggest problem when it comes to these issues, because the class warfare, the anti-corruption, the anti-big money that the Democrats love to throw out there, there was nobody who was a bigger crony capitalist, with the exception of maybe Hillary Clinton, than Joe Biden. And he's tried to portray himself. We saw what he was doing yesterday in Pennsylvania. He's middle-class Joe. And his biggest problem is going to be his Democratic opponents. They're going to go after him hard. The Peter Buttigiegs of the world, the Beto O'Rourke's, that's going to be his real problem. And it's interesting, too, is the liberal media, whereas if Republicans give them this information, they tend not to run it, but they're going to run it when it's coming from the Democrats.
Who do you think has the better chance? I mean, are they going to nominate somebody hard left? I mean, after Hillary robbed Bernie Sanders of the primary, I know they changed some rules, especially on the superdelegates, et cetera, but is the system still rigged in the Democratic primaries to favor an establishment guy like Biden, John? Or do you think that, you know, Biden is going to get his head handed to him by his own party?
No, I think your latter comment is right on, that he's going to get his hand handed to him by his own party, because we did a national survey where we asked all Americans which do they think is more fair, free market capitalism or socialism. And the majority of Americans, 54 to 30, said free market capitalism. However, among Democrats, it was socialism, 50%, and free market capitalism, only 31%. So they're looking for an extreme socialist. And Biden isn't quite extreme enough, and he's way too Washington. So what's going to happen is you're going to see somebody, whether it's Bernie Sanders, who's the Karl Marx of the Democrat Party, or one of these younger left-wing progressives, whether it's a Harris or a Buttigieg, it's going to be somebody new that really creates problems for him. And you're going to see the Democrat Party, as the president's more successful, creating jobs, making America stronger. So as he's more successful, the Democrats are going to get more extreme and more deranged.
All right, got to take a break. Our pollsters, John and Jim McLaughlin, are with us. When we come back, we're going to compare the average size of a, well, we'll show it tonight, but we'll explain in detail in a minute, the crowd size between a Trump rally and a Biden rally in Pennsylvania, which hometown you would think was massive, right? Well, maybe it was. We'll give you the answer on the other side. Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern, Fox News. We have a big show and breaking news with John Solomon. All right, final moments with our pollsters, John and Jim McLaughlin. We'll get to your calls on the other side of the break. All right, so with the average Trump, you know, rally, you have, you know, 10, 15, 20,000 people outside. You know, you pack these arenas, you know, to the brim. There's no shortage of people. It's the hottest ticket in town. So yesterday you would have thought, what, John, 8,000 for Biden? Well, I actually had the hunt to find it. The L.A. Times say that, the new Democratic Party's messiah had 600 people. Hillary had no crowds either. You know, what are we supposed to draw from that?
Well, I think, first of all, you got to realize with the success President Trump's having with the economy, a lot of people have jobs now, so they really don't want to go to a Biden rally. They'd rather work and make money. So, but with Trump rallies, I mean, you can't even compare it. It's just ridiculous, because the president, like you said, he'll have 20,000 people in an arena, and he'll have another 20, 30,000 people outside watching it on TV or something like that. You can't compare it.
Yeah. Last word, Jim.
Sean, I'm guessing, too, that was one of the reasons why he delayed the announcement, was they were having trouble gaining a crowd. And in a campaign, and I've been here before with some of our own campaigns, they did the video first because they didn't want to do, they were trying to get people. They were trying to create excitement. And still, even after doing the video, think about it. He's the former vice president. He gets 600 people in a room. I'm telling you, every time Donald Trump does an event, I get 600 emails and texts from people asking me to try to get him into a Donald Trump event. I mean, there's no comparison between the two. And it's a really bad sign when you're a former vice president and you can't even get 1,000 people. room for your announcement for president.
All right, got to let you both go. Thank you, John and Jim McLaughlin, McLaughlin Associates, 800-941-SEAN. When we come back, right to the phones, some of the other news of the day. And Hannity, big breaking news on this Ukraine story. It's going to blow it wide open with connections you never dreamed of. 9 Eastern, Fox News, quick break, right back. We'll continue. It's the Sean Hannity Show.
Not only do women like Dr. Ford, who bravely comes forward, need to be heard, but they need to be believed. They need to be believed. I just want to say to the men of this country, just shut up and step up. Do the right thing.
Let me just say right at the outset, I believe Dr. Ford, I believe the survivor here.
I believe her. I stand with her. And
do you hope
I
she shows up on Monday? Do you hope that she testifies?
I don't think she should be bullied into this scenario.
I believe her.
I believe Professor Ford. I think she's credible.
You know, I really think sometimes we got to get out of New York, get out of Washington, get out of the big cities, and think about what the questions are you want to ask a major candidate in terms of their candidacy for president. The amount of time that was spent on Biden's hugs. This is a guy who has hugged 5 to 10 million people, and they love the fact that he's touchy and huggy, and they run to him. And 5 women are uncomfortable with the way he hugged them, and say one of them says she smelled his hair. I can promise you, I know Joe Biden. He went up behind her and he took a deep breath because he was about to go on stage. I want to explain that.
It's funny
because there's a woman who accuses him of smelling her hair. He's not interested in your hair. Okay, he was going on stage and he took a deep breath before he went on stage, and you took it deeply personally, and now you're writing a New York Times op-ed about it demanding an apology. This, once again, is completely ridiculous, and the rest of America thinks it's ridiculous too. I'm done. You guys can continue to talk about this. I won't. I refuse to give it any more time.
Ah, Mika. Yeah, of course. Everybody believes, but I'm not taking on anything involving creepy, crazy Uncle Joe. No, 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 no. We believe everything about Justice Kavanaugh from 5 years ago when he was in high school. Even allegations. I mean, think back at through the prism of the Kavanaugh hearings for a second here. And, you know, Democrats thought they had Kavanaugh. And there was blood in the water to them. This was going to be another borking of another Supreme Court nominee, and they were going to win, and they had all the momentum on their side, and they captured the attention of the national media and pretty much were dragging this man through the mud, guilt by accusation, no due process, no presumption of innocence. They had him. Now, they like they did with the Clarence Thomas case. You know, the story about Joe Biden calling Anita Hill and saying, apparently he didn't say I'm sorry. So Anita Hill thinks still doesn't get it, which was an interesting comment because that means he just wanted it, you know, to basically say, well, I hope you're voting Democrat, vote for me. And, you know, if I have, like when people apologize, well, if I may have offended you. Well, did you or did you not offend me? That's not an apology. If I may have blah, blah, blah. But when you say, you know what I did was wrong, I'm sincerely apologetic. I want to make it up to you. That is an apology, taking full responsibility. And you think of it got so obscene and absurd that it became, you know, one story after another. And it didn't matter how insane the allegations were at that point. And Michael Avenatti is now being now under indictment. But, you know, Michael Avenatti brings out Julie Swetnick, and hers became even more salacious than some of the earlier allegations. Back when Kavanaugh was in high school, she apparently was in college. That pretty much every other weekend is how the story went. That this group of boys and girls, obviously in high school, teenagers, that they would have pretty much every other weekend these parties. And the boys would spike the punch with whatever to the point where the girls were knocked out. And then the girls were taken to rooms where the boys would line up in the hall and systematically gang rape these young girls, and it happened every other weekend. And then all of a sudden she did an interview, and then it became, well, I never saw Justice Kavanaugh, Brett Kavanaugh, I never saw him near the punch bowl. Well, I saw him near the punch bowl, I never saw him pouring the punch and giving anybody punch, but he was holding a red Solo cup. Well, I don't remember him standing in line, but he definitely was in a hall. Well, if you're in somebody's house, I would assume you're in a hall. Nobody remembered her. Nobody, if that had happened, yeah, it just doesn't pass the smell test that one of the victims of what would be a horrific systematic evil perpetrated and crime perpetrated against innocent young girls at that point, I can't believe wouldn't have been reported. She's acting like everybody knew it. Nobody backed her up. And that would mean that every other weekend when this supposedly had happened, well, they would, you know, nobody told a teacher, a parent, an older brother, sister, a mentor, a pastor, a rabbi. Nobody told anybody. It just happened. And then every single allegation, we got the same reaction from the Senate Democrat, I believe, and House Democrat, I believe. So, you know, if it's really the issue they care about, I keep using this example. I watched Gail King conduct these two interviews with these two women that make very serious allegations of rape and violent sexual assault against the current Lieutenant Governor of Virginia. And none of the I believers seem to care because nothing has happened. I'm probably the only one in the media that keeps bringing this up. Hello? Whoa, wait. I believers, where are you? I don't know what happened with the lieutenant governor and these women.
And I told my two closest friends.
What did you tell your two closest friends?
I believe I told them that something really awful had happened and that I had been raped. And I think I said that I was so humiliated I didn't want to talk about it anymore.
Did you tell them that Justin was the one who had done this to you?
I didn't.
Or you just said
no,
I
told them exactly who it was.
How do you process that after it happens to you?
It was a huge betrayal. He was my friend. I don't understand how you do that to somebody that you've been a friend to and who's confided in you about things. I just don't understand how you do that.
What kind of things did you confide to him?
He knew that the year prior that I had been raped by someone and that nothing was done about it. And he was a very good friend to me, which is why I never would have expected anything like this from him.
What do you want to happen to Justin Fairfax? Why are you coming forward?
In my ideal world, I'd want him to resign. There were two main reasons why I came forward, right? Like, there's a million reasons not to come forward, right? It's tough, I'm not gonna lie. The Virginia people need to know who it is that they elected. They need to know. I think the Virginia people, the voters of Virginia, have a right to know, you know, both my story and Meredith's story, right? I think there should be a public hearing. I think that...
Not an investigation.
But these women both said that they had corroborated their story to people at the time, and those people are willing to corroborate their corroboration, if you will. We don't hear anything. Amazing. So is it the issue they care about, or is it using an issue as a weapon to bludgeon political opponents? Because it seems to be the latter. I think everybody should care about violent sexual assault, rape, drugging. If you don't care about that, you don't have a heart and a conscience and a soul, period. So, but to use something like that for politics... It's just so low. And we've seen this a lot, happen a lot. You know, the rush, the race to judgment. Jussie Smollett is an example. We always go back to the this kid, Nicholas Sandman, wearing the MAGA hat. You know, think about this. All these media people, they saw a snippet. The only snippet they saw was the end of what had happened. In other words, Nathan Phillips, Native American activist, right in the face of this 16-year-old kid with a Make America Great Again hat on. The kid is smiling. The kid he's right in his grill. Now, the story became, well, that he walked up to Nathan Phillips, that he had caused all of this, and that he provoked all of this. And this didn't go on for a day. This went on for days and days. And the 99% of the media that went along with all of it. Nicholas Sandman, it turns out, you know, he and his fellow students from Covington High School, you know, they happened to be there for a pro-life rally. They were seeing some of the sites. I think it was the Lincoln Memorial. Was that where it was? The Lincoln Memorial? Somewhere where they ended up, and I guess they were waiting for their transportation. And they go to see, you know, some of the monuments, which is a normal thing to do. And when they arrived, they had no idea that the Black Hebrew Israelites are just verbally assaulting them with every name possible and taunting them.
Let's make America great again. A bunch of child molesting.
See how you got these pompous come down here in the middle of a Native rally with their dirty hat on.
You got all these dirty behind you with a red Make America Great hat again on, and your cool ass, you want to fight your brother.
A bunch of incest babies. A bunch of babies made out of incest.
And the one thing that Nicholas Sandman himself did is tell his fellow student, no, don't respond. Don't say anything. Don't say a thing. Which I think for a 16-year-old kid shows an enormous amount of self-restraint and discipline that I don't even know if I'd have. I probably wouldn't. Those of you that know me, I kind of have a big mouth. But he didn't do a thing. He did the right thing. And it turns out that Nathan Phillips walked up to him and was banging that drum, which he said was a prayer, in the face of Nicholas Sandman. And Nicholas tried to just, as he said in one interview, just convey that he was friendly and smiled and that, what do I do with this? You're 16 years old. What are you supposed to do? I mean, he's banging it right in his face. But it turns out the media, the 99%, the guilt by accusation media, the no due process media, the no presumption of innocence media, the selective moral outrage media, well, they just ran with the narrative. And they slandered this kid. Here's the worst part of all of this. The worst part of this is this kid did everything right, and they didn't care. They didn't care at all. If it meant that they could bludgeon Trump with a narrative, they never made a phone call to corroborate their stories with days of coverage. Let me predict what's going to happen. He's hired famed attorney Lynn Wood, who I've known since 1996 from Atlanta when I was a local host, who worked for Richard Jewell. There's two lawsuits filed now against the Washington Post, $250 million, fake news CNN, $275 million, and much more to come. And I can't see a jury in this country putting up with that reckless, irresponsible. They couldn't make a phone call to corroborate that story. And they smeared, slandered, and libeled a 16-year-old kid. The jury rules in favor of Nicholas Sandman, is my prediction, but they'll settle before they get there. That's going to wrap things up for today. All right, Hannity Watch tonight, 9 Eastern, on the Fox News Channel. We're watching the situation in Venezuela. If news breaks on that, we will bring it towards you. The battle, the witch hunt, the fishing expedition, it never stops, and Democrats are going in deeper and deeper into stupidity. We have Judicial Watch now looking for really incredible documents. We'll break that wide open tonight. Geraldo Dambongino, Tom Fitton, Alan Dershowitz responding to the New York Times. Also, Solomon and Carter and Kevin McCarthy. That's all coming up Hannity tonight, 9 Eastern on Fox News. We'll see you then. We'll see you back here tomorrow.